is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go.
Now, here's Adam, Dave, and Jamie.
And we're back here on this Tuesday, March 21st. Adam Azer, Dave Richard, Jamie Eisenberg. Pumped to be talking fantasy football right now. Yeah, we're going to look back at the draft that we broke down on our previous show, but also, hey, Marshawn Lynch. Wow, this is quite the rumor. Marshawn Lynch, the Raiders are interested. Fill in the blank. Let's start the show with this. Fill in the blank. If Marshawn Lynch is on the Oakland Raiders next year, Lynch is a top blank running back.
I think I would say top 30.
Top 30, not
too
high.
Top 30, Adam. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Dave.
How are you?
Hey, great call on Duke, by the way. You warned the listeners, don't pick Duke to win the title.
I wish I had done that with Villanova as well, because then my bracket would still not look like it was dipped in red paint.
All right, top 30.
I lit
Dave.
My bracket on fire, and I barbecued on it.
And Jamie, Marshawn Lynch, top blank.
Tasted like crow.
Top 30.
You're afraid to go top 24, right?
I'm not afraid. I wouldn't
say it. Then say it. Say it. Say top 24.
No, I wouldn't do it. Why would I say it if I'm not going to do it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the whole point. Is that it's not afraid. You're right, but it's more like. Here's how I feel about it. I'm rooting for him to do great. Like I love Marshawn Lynch. I've always been a big fan of his. And I recognize that being the lead back in Oakland could mean 10 touchdowns.
Or 12, like the guy he would be replacing.
But I don't know. I don't know if he's A, going to get the opportunity to get game after game with 15 plus carries, much less 20. And I don't know if he can stay healthy.
Because he's at that last point. Time
right.
He played. You know, who knows what his interest level is right now? And the two guys that would be behind him, I think Jalen Richard is better than DeAndre Washington, but they're relatively similar. I think those two guys are more explosive. I mean, both guys averaged over 5 yards a carry last year.
All right, so let's talk about the whole, like, Marshawn Lynch is too old. He's actually not that old. Lynch would be 31 years old next year.
Not old in real life, but in the NFL.
He'd be 31 years old this year, Adam. He turns 31 in April.
And
right, next
he has
season.
Over 2,300 career carries.
Yeah, I understand. But you know, obviously Lynch really struggled in 2015. He averaged 3.8 yards per carry. He played only 7 games. The 3 prior seasons, he played 16 games. The year before that, he played 15 games. Never averaged worse than 4.2 carries or yards per carry. He was obviously
I think everybody knows he was among the best running backs in football during his time at the peak of his power in Seattle. But as he hit, I guess he was 29, but as he turned 29, get close to 30. That's when the breakdown started to happen for him. And you just have to wonder, it's like, what's the point here for, or what's the upside here? I mean, the point is obvious, but what's the upside here from our perspective? For the Raiders, it makes sense. You know, you're not going to have to spend a ton of money on him, you would assume.
They'll make it all back in jersey sales.
You still have two other guys on the roster that can help out if there's an injury or missed time. And they still may address the position in the draft anyway, because I don't know if the long-term answer for that spot is on their team.
Yeah, but just the point I was going to make was that a year off really seemed to do a lot of good to Adrian Peterson. And I think, you know, if Marshawn Lynch had played last year, I wouldn't really feel that way, but I wouldn't really feel optimistic. But I do think that there's a case to be made that he's refreshed, that sitting out a year could really do wonders for him, and he could have a nice bounce-back season.
Yes, the one thing I would say, though, is you're talking about the year Peterson was suspended?
Yeah, he played one game.
Right. I would imagine the training regimen for Peterson with the expectation that he was going to get back on the field, not to relive that whole soap opera, was, you know, could he be reinstated at X point? Remember, we had people picking him up, and, you know, we didn't know how long the suspension was going to last. I mean, Lynch has been traveling the world. He's been playing bagpipes. He's been doing all sorts of fun stuff. I can't imagine where Peterson was at that point, which I think was, what, the 2014 season, if I'm not mistaken, right? Yeah, because 2015 he had a good year.
2014 played one game, yeah.
Right, so 2014. So Peterson's going to be 32. I think he's 32 today.
Happy birthday.
So he, He was 29 then, right? Is my math right?
You lost me.
29, 30, 31. This would be his age 32 season, yes.
Right. So he was 29. So 2 years younger, essentially. Still in the prime of his, you know, physical shape.
Well, no, one year younger, if you're talking about, like, because 2015 was Peterson's bounce back year. He had 1,485 yards and 11 touchdowns, averaged 4.5 yards per carry, and then he was 30.
Okay, so 1 year difference, you're right. Yeah. I don't know. I think the thing that would save Marshawn Lynch is be playing behind a very good offensive line. That is really, from a fantasy perspective, the only saving grace. If he was going to a team let's say he was replacing Peterson, he was Latavius Murray. You know, his lifelong dream was to play in Minnesota, not in Oakland. This would be terrible.
Sure, sure.
It'd be a disaster if he was going back to Seattle.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. His lifelong dream is
right.
to go back to Seattle.
You'd be on the same side of the argument of is Eddie Lacy any good? So I don't know. I think top 30 is fair. Could he be top 24? Sure.
Are you taking him in round 4?
No.
Round 5.
I'm taking Lacy ahead of him. I'm taking Latavius Murray ahead of him.
Round 5.
No.
Round 6.
No.
Round 7.
Maybe.
Well, then I'll get him because I'll take him in round 6.
Have
but
fun.
That's
I'd rather get
that's
Jalen
as
Richard.
High as I'll go.
This to me sets up very nicely for Jalen Richard, who I think is a great sleeper this year and absolutely somebody I'm going to target with a late round pick in every league.
That could be the guy who ends up being the passing downs back
and playing on rushing downs when Lynch misses 4 games.
Not Washington, DeAndre Washington could be that guy.
He could.
I think he's almost better suited to be that guy.
He could, but Richard was better than him in everything last year, so I think Richard could be better than him.
He was definitely better than him in passing. I'd have to check and see on the rushing, but
his rushing was better.
You probably know.
Yeah.
But he also works on special teams. That doesn't scare you? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
Doesn't matter. I mean, look, he's not a full-time guy. Neither one of those two guys are full-time guys.
Right. They're strictly backups, right. And in the event of a Lynch injury, which could happen, yeah, there you go. I almost wonder if Lynch does come back, Is it just for the fun and giggles of playing in Oakland?
Well,
that's
the team
homecoming thing
that's ready to win now, so he gets another shot at a potential long playoff run. He lives in Oakland, like you said. You know,
I think that's his motivation.
Sure, it's also. I mean, the you know, if you read all the reports, it would help his charity organization that he runs there.
Yep,
it would help the community.
Of course,
jersey sales, like you said. You know, I mean, I'm sure for him it would be great to walk around the city and see Lynch jerseys in silver and black in one of their final years in Oakland.
Well, Dave, you did a Twitter poll about it. So what are the good people out there thinking about drafting Marshawn Lynch if he's on the Raiders?
So I did 4 categories where you could vote. Rounds 2, 3, because I don't think anybody's taking Marshawn in round 1. Rounds 4, 5, round 6, 7, or round never, meaning you're just not going to bother with him, because if you're not going to take him by round 6 or round 7, you're not going to find him after that. And 53% of people would take him in round 5 or sooner. That's combining the round 2, 3 and round 4, 5 results. And I was surprised by that. There are people who are willing to forget about the fact that he didn't play last year and the fact that he was a bum when he played in 2015. And they're going to run right back to Marshawn Lynch figuring, well, he'll do at least what Latavius Murray did last season. And Latavius Murray, I believe, was the 12th or 13th best fantasy running back last season.
Because of his touchdowns.
It was on the strength of 12 touchdowns. So I think it's crazy to spend a pick that high on Marshawn Lynch when there's no guarantee that he'll get 12 touchdowns, 10 touchdowns, 8 touchdowns. You'd like to think that that's possible. There's potential there for it. The point in the draft where you're going to start finding players that you're not jazzed about is going to be around 6, and I think that's the perfect time to throw your dart at Marshawn Lynch.
Here's what his agent said on Tuesday in a radio interview, that he loves the game of football. He's 30, but until I meet with him this week, you know, I don't know what his mindset is. He's the kind of guy that can shift by the hour. So this isn't even a done deal by any stretch.
No. By the way, Latavius Murray also had 33 catches last year in 14 games.
Yeah, Lynch isn't doing that.
Yeah, Lynch is not going to do that. Murray had 41
I believe his
catches.
Career best was 39 catches, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Murray had 41 catches in 2015 in 16 games. Catches. All right, well, look, there's more going on than just Marshawn Lynch. Pittsburgh signed Nyle Davis. So, Jamie, I know you like taking Carlos Williams with your last pick.
Well, I like taking Carlos Williams with my last pick when Carlos Williams was a part of the Steelers organization.
Well, yeah, is Nyle Davis now the guy that you want to take with your last pick?
No, because Carlos Williams to me was somebody that, if he was on the field as we saw when he was with Buffalo, he had the opportunity to potentially be D'Angelo Williams. I don't believe Nyle Davis to be that guy.
All right.
So they're not done by any stretch adding to their backfield, and they still could bring back D'Angelo Williams.
The Jets signed Josh McCown, quarterback, 1 year, $6 million deal, an additional $7 million in incentives. Anybody pumped?
No.
It's bad for Eric Decker.
It's bad for everything. Jets are going to be a sinkhole this year. I was looking over their schedule, or their opponents, their schedule's not out yet. But I don't know if they win four games. I think it's a big time drop for the Jets in 2017.
Is Josh McCown going to be worse than Ryan Fitzpatrick was last year?
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Well, he's more injury prone, so you have to wonder how many games he'll play. They need to draft a quarterback. I mean, you know, the story that came out afterwards is that they would consider a quarterback at 6 overall.
Yeah.
And so it just makes sense, unless they believe that Christian Hackenberg could be their guy, but they've shown no indication that that's the case. I don't quite understand why they would sign McCown as their guy, as opposed to maybe take a chance on Kaepernick, you know, who's still young enough and could give you 2 or 3 good years, especially since he played relatively well last year. So this move was a little odd to me, but whatever.
Okay. Also, we have good news for quarterbacks and wide receivers. We have the Dallas secondary looking completely different. They have lost cornerbacks Brandon Carr and Mo Claiborne, safeties Barry Church and J.J. Wilcox. They did add Nolan Carroll. So you're looking at NFC East quarterbacks facing the Cowboys twice a year. We know the pass rush hasn't really been great for the Cowboys. We'll see. Maybe it'll get better. They got some young talent there. Of course, they have the NFL draft coming up. But this is pretty, I don't know, it's almost shocking to see a team lose this much of their secondary in one offseason. What's your reaction to this for the Cowboys?
Well, they did have a good cornerback emerge last year in Anthony Brown. And they've got Orlando Scandrick, who can be their slot corner, and Carroll can play the outside. Jeff Heath was making plays in the playoffs for the Cowboys. You'll remember the sack on Aaron Rodgers where he held on to the football. Even though he was hit from the blind side, that was Heath who hit him. He had a good game. They've got Jones, like you said, at free safety. I'm not ready to say that they're going to fall off a cliff because of all these players that they're losing. If anything, I still want to see that pass rush get better for Dallas. And that'll in turn help the secondary perform better.
You know what they're doing in the draft. I mean, it's going to be all defense.
Yeah, but they don't have a very high pick, so I'm not sure they're going to get an impact cornerback right out of the gate.
Well, it's a very deep draft for corners and safeties, so that's, you know, in their benefit. And, you know, I mean, look, what we've seen from Dallas in 2014 and 2016 is they don't have to have stars in name on defense to be a good team overall. So from your question, from a fantasy perspective, you know, the hope would be is, okay, Dallas does what they do, which is try and dominate time of possession, run the ball, and leave teams in catch-up mode. That'll help opposing quarterbacks like Eli, like Cousins, you know, hopefully Carson Wentz as well, in those division games, and they're out-of-division opponents also. So hopefully it leads to some shootouts from an offensive standpoint for their opponents.
Yay, we like shootouts. Andrew Luck gets another weapon. He gets Kamar Aiken. The Colts have signed him. And overtime might go from 15 minutes to 10 minutes. What do you think about shortening overtime?
Just go to the college system and call it a day. College system is the best. Each team gets a possession.
Yeah.
Maybe it goes to triple overtime. It's a lot of fun, lots of high drama. The NFL won't do it because they want to have a hard stop for the networks when a game ends. I don't know. I think they ditch that. Just go with what college does.
I always find the college format pretty fun. After 2 overtimes, you have to go for 2 every time in college. So yeah, that's fun too. Maybe you should make like a 3-point conversion. Like not a field goal, but you know what I'm saying. You're digging it.
What does that mean?
You know, you go for 3 instead of going for 2. Like they
how
just,
do you go for 3?
You back it up. Rules. You back it up to the 7-yard line.
Can I go for 4?
Yeah, you put it at the 11.
Go for 18?
Midfield. Let's
too complicated.
Let's
college system. Let's just keep it like that.
So we covered a lot on the draft. There were a few other things I wanted to talk about from last week's 12-team standard scoring draft post free agency. Jamie wrote up the story about it on the website. Dave wrote something up on Marshawn Lynch. So we got some good written content for you. If you want to go to cbssports.com/fantasy, find the football page. One thing I wanted to talk about that I didn't get a chance to was. I got this new little strategy that I like doing here. I sort of accidentally fell in love with it last year when I drafted Amari Cooper in our Fantasy Football Today League, our PPR league, and then in like the 7th or the 8th round, I drafted Michael Crabtree. And didn't, I mean, it was like a whatever pick at the time. I was like, ah, I don't want to draft Crabtree. I already have Cooper. But I guess my point here is that if you draft two players on the same team who play the same position, as long as they're far enough apart in round, you sort of draft a security blanket because it's unlikely that they're both going to be bad. And I know a lot of people ask, what do you think about drafting three players on the same team? Whatever. I'm talking about the same position. I would usually say, no, don't do that. But I like it now. Like, pairing Keenan Allen and Tyrell Williams, I think, is a great idea given where you can draft both of them. One of them is probably going to be really good. Pairing Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray, it's not really just a handcuff situation. Henry was great value, I think, in our last draft. But what do you guys think about this? Isn't it amazing? And am I the originator? Can we call it the Azer strategy?
It's not amazing and it's not original.
But we can call it the Azer strategy.
All right, I got one thing there. It's pretty amazing though, I think.
What's amazing about it, Adam?
You named a couple of examples that work, but running backs are a little bit different because you're going to try and lock up a backfield if you potentially can. But I think when you talk about, handcuffing receivers, think about if you would have drafted, and you probably would have done it relatively high, Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. Now, I know what you said, if it makes sense. And again, the examples you listed do make sense. But how many other receiver combinations would it make sense for to take two guys with the hope that you're going to use both of them on a somewhat consistent basis?
Moreover, how often do two receivers on the same team who you would consider starting both go off in your fantasy league? You mentioned Crabtree and Cooper. Only 4 times last year were they both in double digits in fantasy
so
points
what?
In the same game.
So what? I started.
So
both.
What?
I
you're burning a lineup spot on somebody who's not going to give you a great game.
But at the end of the day,
you know it going into the week.
You had 2 top 12 receivers at the end of the day. There aren't that many good receivers out there. I mean, like, it's a deep position. There aren't that many great ones. At the end of the day, Cooper and Crabtree both had really good years. I think they were both top 12, if not top 15. So I did start them both pretty much every week. And Amari Cooper was a disappointment. But in Amari Cooper being a disappointment, Michael Crabtree was a really nice surprise. So the two picks ended up working out.
Yeah, again, I think those examples work. Like, I'm thinking of one for this year. Like, you mentioned Keenan Allen and Tyrell Williams.
I think that's one.
That's one. I think J.J. Nelson and Larry Fitzgerald is another one, because you'll get Fitzgerald's hopefully good streak, and then maybe J.J. Nelson has the breakout year that at least I'm hoping for. That's two guys that you could draft and have relative success with.
Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant?
Absolutely. That's another good example. I think you look at this example is probably closer to Cooper and Crabtree, but Hilton and Moncrief, two guys that have top 24 upside. Cooks and Edelman are probably going to be too close together when it's all said and done that you want to draft those two guys, but you could draft Odell Beckham in the first round and Brandon Marshall probably in round 5 and get that duo too.
The other problem is that by investing in two receivers on the same team, you're also investing in the quarterback in that team without getting the fantasy points from him. So when Derek Carr went down last year, Cooper and Crabtree combined for one instance of double digits in fantasy points.
Well, happened, when did he go down in week 15?
I think it was a little before then.
It was pretty late. I think it was week 16.
I think
17.
It was week 16 too, because I almost...
It was late?
Yeah,
it was very late.
Well, they both finished poorly. For some reason, I had it in my head that Carr...
Week 16, he got hurt.
Did he?
Of course they finished poorly. Yeah, he got hurt.
Right.
He got hurt in against the Colts.
You had a two-game sample size because they played week 17 in the playoff game.
I kind of like spreading it around a little bit. Especially when it comes to receivers.
I do too. I mean, look, again, Adam, it worked out well for you in the situation that you had it with those two Raiders receivers because they both were good. Maybe not week to week consistently together, but they were good. You can make the same argument about anybody that had Cooks and Thomas for the Saints last year, because you probably drafted Thomas with a late round pick after drafting Cooks and you ended up starting those guys. The consistency wasn't necessarily great with them. It's going to be the case with any good passing game where you can get two receivers. I mean, there's probably a lot of people that drafted Jordy Nelson early and, ended up picking up Devontae Adams off free agency and played both those guys and had good production. So it's case by case. It's player by player, team by team. But I don't know if that's something that you necessarily want to target going into your draft, unless, of course, you're just going all in on a particular team.
And then finally, just the general nature of wide receivers. It's that they're inconsistent, just generally speaking. The best of the best aren't. That's why they're taken in the first couple of rounds. So it's kind of an interesting concept to think about, but only with the teams that we just mentioned. I'm not going to go and take Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett on the same team. I think that's kind of a waste.
But you're not really drafting Tyler Lockett anyway. I mean,
well, late pick.
I think in that case it actually makes sense, because you're not necessarily saying I'm going to start both those guys. But if Lockett has the breakout season that he could potentially have, that we thought maybe he was going to have last year,
mm-hmm.
it's such a minimal investment. I think the further you get apart, the more sense it makes.
Well, further
you get apart,
that's
meaning
true.
At least one of the receivers is a late round pick.
Absolutely.
Round 9, round 10, somewhere
absolutely.
Late.
Absolutely.
Like
That I agree with.
But then it doesn't matter whether you've got the guy on the same team or not. You're just investing in that player as a breakout candidate.
Right,
anyway.
But you're saying don't do it, though. But what I'm saying is...
Because I don't think you should go into your draft targeting guys on a team that might not be so pass happy.
Well, I'll give you an example. I think John Brown's going to have a bounce back season in a big way. And so I like J.J. Nelson. I try to target J.J. Nelson. I'm probably going to draft J.J. Nelson if he's there in round 7. That's a guy that I'm looking for. John Brown's not going to go until probably round 9 or round 10. To me, that's an easy guy to take as I'm assuming Nelson's probably the way I draft, mm-hmm. going to be my 3rd or my 4th, most likely my 4th. John Brown will be my 5th.
And in that case, it's not that bad of an investment, because round 6, round 9 is what we're talking about.
Yep.
I don't like their quarterback in the long-term health situation. There's a chance that he could break down over the course of the year, and that would hurt both of them.
Sure, or he plays in the second half of the season, and they're great.
That could happen, too. I also worry about consistency when both of those guys are on the field, because they're both
but again,
you've got to make the decision.
That's not the point, though. You're missing the point of the Azer strategy.
No, I'm not going to start either one of them. That's my 4th and my 5th wide receiver on my fantasy team. It's such a minimal investment for either one that I'm looking at it as they're both lottery tickets. And so it's the same thing. Tyler Lockett's a lottery ticket. You drafted Adam Thielen in our last draft. That's a lottery ticket.
Sure.
Not that Stephon Diggs is somebody I know you're targeting, but if Stephon Diggs can ever put together 16 games of what he's shown flashes of, and let's just say you did draft him, Diggs and Thielen, that's a great two guys to target.
I'm going to be sick thinking about
that. Mid to late round picks.
I don't know. I'm not explaining this well, or the absolute brilliance of the strategies. Honestly, if one of the two guys is bad, that's almost the point of the strategy. It's like, I don't necessarily want two mediocre players. I want one great player out of the two that I'm picking.
Yeah, but I think the problem with that is, though, which is, I'm sure, is something that you ran into from time to time. Now, your team, I know, just because we ended up playing in the finals of that league, was great. And so you had where one guy was potentially bad, most times it was Cooper, the rest of your team was compensating for that. But you could have a situation where you drafted one of those guys, especially with the Raiders guys or let's say the Colts guys or the two top Patriots receivers. Let's just say two guys in the first 5 rounds. If that's the investment you're making and one guy is bad and the rest of your team is not good, you're not covering up for the one guy struggling on the week that the other guy is great, but maybe not putting up two players worth of points great.
Yeah, it's not going to be a situation where I think they're going to be inconsistent. It's almost like if this guy goes down or this guy struggles, this other player will do well. And I'm also not going to take it to an extreme. Like, for example, I drafted Davante Adams in the 3rd round of this draft last week. I drafted Tyrell Williams in, I think, the 7th round, and round 7. Randall Cobb went 2 picks later. I think if Davante Adams gets hurt, Randall Cobb is going to have a good year. I don't know if this is going to be a great year, but I still value Tyrell Williams more than Cobb, enough so that I'm not going to do this strategy just to pair Cobb with Davante Adams. Like, I think Tyrell Williams should be drafted ahead of Randall Cobb. I'm assuming you guys agree.
100%.
Yeah, so I'm not going to reach to take Cobb so I can pair him with Adams when I can take a better player. I'm not going to do that. But
I understand what you're doing. I think it's just a matter of the round span that we're talking about here.
Yes. That's big.
And, you know, like another guy just popped in my head is Terrell Pryor, somebody I think we're all going to look to try and draft in the first 5 rounds because he has the potential to be a breakout player. But Josh Doctson, somebody that could technically be a handcuff to him or could be somebody that's a compliment to him. And that's an easy guy to look at with a late round pick. So I think the further apart you get in this exercise, and maybe it is treating them as wide receiver handcuffs, the better off you'll be. It's just the problem will become is when, you know, for like your team, again, it worked out really well for you last year. Probably worked out for the people that drafted Jordy Nelson and ended up with Davante Adams because those guys were great. But there are probably a few other scenarios where it didn't work out so well. The Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd pairing, you know, clearly that's one that was awful. So, you know, I think it's just clearly as we talk about this all the time, it's the other players around the team you build with certain strategies, but I don't know how early you want to invest in two receivers from the same team.
But yeah,
unless
but
you're totally sold on them just being fantastic.
Let me just respond to your Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd thing. You know, obviously Floyd was drafted first, so kind of weird. But if you had drafted Floyd and then you had drafted Fitzgerald and Floyd was this terrible bust, Larry Fitzgerald led the NFL in catches, didn't he? So one of the reasons he led the NFL in catches was because Michael Floyd was so bad.
Well, it was also because John Brown was sick and wasn't playing fully. And
I know. I can't, you know, it's hard to come up with like a perfect scenario here. But what I'm saying is the failures of Michael Floyd actually did help
Larry
Fitzgerald
quite a
bit.
Sure. No, yeah, you're right. But still, it's what other player could you have had with that receiver if your idea was I'm taking Floyd and Fitzgerald just in case, because it happened 2 years ago too, just in case Floyd breaks his hand again and Fitzgerald has a great start to the season like he did in 2015.
Yeah, Floyd. Like, I wouldn't have done Floyd and Fitzgerald because, like you were saying, it does matter the spread, the difference in rounds. It's got to be a significant enough difference, I think, for it to matter. And hopefully you're drafting bench players as well. But I guess I've always been a little bit more open to the idea of handcuffing a wide receiver, and this is taking it a little bit farther. But you know what? It's the Azer strategy now, so.
There's a good enough track record of Cooper and Crabtree where you could say, okay, I know I'm going to get two top 15 wide receivers or two top 20 wide receivers by the end of the season. I know if I take Edelman and Cooks, there's the potential for those guys to be two top 20 receivers by the end of the season. So there are certainly guys you could target early, you know, depending on how confident you feel in Brandon Marshall. Obviously, Odell Beckham still got the chance to be a top 15, top 10 wide receiver. The move of DeSean Jackson to pair with Mike Evans.
A little more expensive.
That's the point though. There are a number of duos where you could look at and say, I'm confident in these duos. I'm confident in the quarterback. I'm confident in the whole scenario and the way that this team is going to play that I'm going to invest first or second round in the star, fourth or fifth round in the second guy.
That's early for me.
Right. Well, the reason it worked out for you was Crabtree was a bargain, because
right.
Nobody expected him to do that again.
But that's what I'm saying. Like that's how you might be able to find a bargain. It was unexpected. Now I'd have to invest more in Michael Crabtree, and that would be a lot. If you know, I don't know, but forget it.
But even taking a step further, I mean, the people that drafted the last few years, Edelman and Gronk together, or
sure,
Jordan Reed and you know this year, Terrell Pryor, or DeSean Jackson and Jordan Reed the last couple years.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for talking me through that. Good stuff. More stuff from the draft.
You can have that strategy, buddy. It's all yours.
Appreciate it. It's going to be misrepresented, but that's fine. Chris Towers drafted Tony Romo in round 12 as his only quarterback. Do you feel like if you draft Tony Romo, you need to get a backup quarterback?
Yeah. His name is Tony Romo.
Well, so you need a starter.
You need a starter.
Because Romo will be the backup. I think in a 12-team league, you could get away with it, maybe not necessarily Romo, but a late round guy as your quarterback, knowing that there will be somebody on waivers that you can go and snag in case of emergency.
Chris takes waiting on a quarterback maybe a little bit to an extreme. I think it's almost like a source of pride for him to be the last owner to draft a quarterback. I tried to wait it out in this last draft, and we were on opposite ends of the draft board, so I was going to see who's going to flinch first. And it actually came down to the round where I took, who was my starter? I know
Mariota.
Where I took Mariota, you're right. In that round, I was looking at because it was coming to me, and everybody else but Chris had a quarterback. Two guys in front of me both took Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins, two guys who I have as my 11th and 12th quarterbacks. Mariota is my 13th ranked quarterback. So I was just gonna take the higher of the two that I have ranked And again, those two guys went in front of me, so I took Mariota. And then I think Chris, I'm going to assume, I don't know when he took Romo, but I took Wentz as a number two guy just because I love the upside for Wentz.
142nd overall
is when he took
Tony
Romo. And when did I take Wentz? Probably before that.
155th.
Okay.
So after. Mm-hmm. Ha.
But that was your backup quarterback. And now, Jamie, as Marcus Mariota as your starting quarterback, are you okay with that or disappointed or what?
Oh, I love Mariota this year. I think there's, assuming his leg is okay. You know, he's proven to be, when he's on the field, a very good, if not great, fantasy quarterback. Remember the stretch he had last year with the 20-plus point games as a rookie before he had the knee injury? He was fantastic. And so I would like to see them add another weapon to challenge Tajae Sharpe as their number two, or maybe upgrade over Rishard Matthews as their number one receiver. But he's done enough. There's enough of sample size for me that he's top 10 potential.
Do you remember, though, that stretch of, let's see, 8 straight games with 20 or more fantasy points and 3 games with 33 or more fantasy points for Mariota in a 6-point per passing touchdown league? The competition was horrible. I mean, it was great for him. It was a stretch of really bad defenses or teams that were playing horribly at the time defensively. We kept talking about that. And then he had a bye, and then he had Denver and Kansas City back-to-back. I don't know how much that's going to factor in, but it's easy
to forget it now.
There's
a reason why I have him ranked 13th. It's not like we're talking about Aaron Rodgers or Andrew Luck or Tom Brady. So there are certainly downsides to him, but he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I think you see... as we saw from year one to year two, I hope the same thing year two to year three, more freedom to throw the ball a little bit and showcase his talent. And the rushing bonus is obviously something that makes him, you know, probably a 17 to 19 passer point, 17 to 19 fantasy point passer to a 20 to 21 fantasy point passer, just because you have that, potential bonus from him. So he's in that category for me of, once you get past, like the number 8 or 9 guy in my rankings, you know, I think Winston, between Cousins and Prescott and Eli and Rivers, I think he's in that next group of guys that has the chance to potentially jump up a tier.
Is there a quarterback, guys, that you have ranked ahead of Marcus Mariota who has a worse number one wide receiver or pass catching option than Mariota? Probably
I don't
not,
think so.
Right? Yeah, maybe.
Well, I mean, does Tony Romo count since we don't know where he's going?
You're assuming he's on worse. Denver or Houston, right?
Right, because that's still going to be better than what he's got. No, I'm going to say Mariota. I have Mariota 16th. I don't have him as high as Jamie. I'm not going to get Mariota in my leagues. I don't like his schedule. And I like so many other quarterbacks better.
Okay. All right, let's just keep in mind.
This year. Too many good ones.
How about back to the draft? Matthew Koka drafted Greg Olsen and Jimmy Graham in consecutive rounds, rounds 4 and 5 in a 12-team league, right? Kind of in the middle of those rounds. He drafted Greg Olsen in round 4 and Jimmy Graham in round 5. Dave, what do you think about that?
I think you will occasionally see that in a fantasy draft.
More PPR than standard.
I think it works out better in PPR, and it especially works out in leagues where you either don't have to start a tight end or you've got multiple flex spots. But in a league like this where you've got one tight end and one flex spot, you're making the decision that you're going to play a tight end at flex all but 2 weeks of the season unless one of those guys are hurt or unless one of them just completely disintegrates into a crappy player, which I don't think we're projecting for either one of those guys. They should both still be very good, and they'll help your fantasy team, and certainly you're going to plunk them in your lineup every week. You don't have to think about it. That's the theory with starting them. But I don't like that.
I hate it.
I don't mind getting two tight ends.
It's terrible.
I just don't like doing it that early. And you, look at the other players you're giving up on. Like I'd love to run through Matt's team.
His number two running back, if I recall correctly, was Charles Sims. So
who he took very early. Like if I remember, he took Charles Sims like way earlier than I think anybody. I'm looking at his team right now. His quarterback is Big Ben. His backup quarterback is Dak, so he invested pretty big on quarterbacks. DeMarco Murray, Charles Sims, and Kenyon Drake, and Devontae Booker. That's what he's got at running back.
Tight ends just don't put up the same numbers that like wide receivers and running backs do.
It's rare when they do.
Two in
it's
your first
really
five.
Rare.
I don't like it.
Unless you're named Gronk and you stay healthy for 16 games.
Yeah, it's one thing when you pair the second guy with Gronk. That's a different scenario. Because you know you're getting top 10 wide receiver production from him. And so that could essentially be a flex.
Yeah. But who do you think was just going to score more fantasy points? Who goes right after Michael Thomas? I know you would prefer Thomas to Gronk, which, let me take a look at the draft results. The wide receiver that went right after Gronk would be, well, Cooks went too early. We know that. Amari Cooper, Rob Gronkowski. Gronkowski might be more valuable because he's tight end eligible, but who's going to just score more fantasy points? Who would you guess?
Well, it depends completely on
16 games.
Be healthier.
16 games.
Gronk hasn't played 16 games in, I think, three seasons.
Right. But
14
if he does,
games.
He's scoring more than Cooper.
Who's going to score more per game?
Still Gronk.
Gronk?
Okay. Should be Gronk, although this is the third year for Cooper, so hopefully this is the next step.
All right. And guess what, Dave?
What's that, Adam?
Something that's going to really excite you? I'm doing a fantasy baseball mock draft right now. You want me to give you the play-by-play?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
I have Mookie Betts, second overall. Oh, no, he took his headset off. Come back. Okay, I'm done.
Mixleek?
Yeah, it's a Mixleek. I forgot about the draft, so I don't even know what the format is. But yeah, I'm going to say it's points. So anyway, back to the football draft, and hopefully Dave will come back on. We had two Redskins go at the beginning of round five. We had Rob Kelly, 49th overall. He was the first pick of round five. Kelly went ahead of Eddie Lacy and Paul Perkins. And we had Jordan Reed go 50th overall in between Greg Olsen and Jimmy Graham. What do you think about those Redskins, 49th and 50th overall, Rob Kelly and Jordan Reed?
I'm waiting for the other shoe to fall on Fat Rob. I've got him right.
But if it doesn't,
I know, I like
him a lot.
Yeah, of course. And that would
And I
tell
don't know
you.
Why they would, to be honest with you, invest in another running back there, because their group is not bad. Because Kelly played well. Thompson's a very capable receiver out of the backfield.
Third down guy.
Matt Jones could still be a backup guy. I don't think you have to necessarily upgrade there dramatically. So late
they
round
can't
pick.
Trust him.
Late round pick in the NFL draft. You could trust Thompson, though.
You can trust Thompson if you had to. It wouldn't surprise me if they drafted another running back.
Yeah, they
but
don't
not
trust...
like not in round one.
No. They're not in the Fournette Cook.
No,
McCaffrey,
but they could go
Kamara.
After like a Brian Hill or
sure.
like Hunt, for example. They can go after somebody like that.
But I just think from what they need, it doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense. To
so Kelly can open the season.
Yeah,
as
I mean, I'm in the process now of doing my sleepers, breakouts, and busts, the first version, and Kelly's on the breakouts list. You know, again,
ooh,
this
really?
Is pre-draft. That there's a lot that could change, and I explained that in the story. But Kelly's the chance to what he showed over 16 games on a team that you know could be a little bit more conservative, just given what their weapons look like. I wouldn't be surprised if Kelly has a big year.
I think he's got to score a ton of touchdowns to have a big, big year, which is par for the course of the running back. I don't think I'm breaking any news, but what I'm basically saying is I don't think you can look at him and say, all right, that's a guy who's getting 1,300 total yards.
Yeah,
no, but I think he's one of the better number two running backs to target.
Kelly had more than two catches only once, so they haven't involved him in the passing game yet.
He could get 20 receptions, but it's not going to...
So he's Alfred Morris.
You're drafting him because you're thinking, all right, here's a dude who's going to get 15 carries a game and work the goal line for Washington. I'm a little worried that Washington's going to play from behind a lot this year. It's one of the reasons why I like Terrell Pryor more than I probably should. But if they're playing from behind, I don't think you're going to see Kelly playing much.
Well, what do you think about Jordan Reed at the very next pick? So 50th overall. I think that's the number four tight end off the board after Gronk, Kelsey, and Olsen.
It's like the standard spot for where Jordan Reed goes in fantasy drafts. I don't remember exactly what his ADP was last year. Was it higher than 48?
Oh, last year was higher because coming off the big year. Right. He was the number 210 off the board.
I feel like this is fine for Jordan Reed.
I took Hunter Henry in round 8, and I think Jamie was like, really?
Yeah, I was too. I thought that was a little too soon.
I didn't think it was too soon necessarily for taking a tight end. I think it was a little too soon just for Henry.
So Ertz went after Henry.
Right, I like Ertz better.
Cameron Brate.
I took Brate 9. I like Brate better too.
What is it that we like about Ertz better than Henry? Like, can we stop with the potential with Ertz? Can I see something?
Well, he's going to have a lot of single coverage this year.
Big red zone target.
I mean, big red zone target. He had 4 touchdowns last year, which was, I think, a career high for Ertz. Henry had 8. Henry had 5 or 6 games with 5 or more targets. I don't think he ever had more than 7 targets.
Oh, Henry's got a ton of potential. It's just the stupid Antonio Gates factor that's going to, you know, physically and literally weigh him down.
I don't think it's just Gates. I think it's everybody in San Diego.
Yeah, there's a lot of mouths to feed there.
Yeah, it could. I mean, certainly Keenan Allen, not, you know, right. Keenan Allen. And that's the thing, like, maybe pair Hunter Henry with Keenan Allen. You figure if Keenan Allen goes down, gets hurt, or struggles, that would probably help Hunter Henry, right?
Sure.
Yep. I think you said Tyrell Williams' name wrong. I might go Henry and Tyrell.
Fine. I think I did do that, actually, in round 7 and 8. Good for
me. Well, that was very smart of you.
I know. It's the Azers strategy.
Yeah, look, if Henry's the guy that you're targeting and there was nobody else you liked on the board, that's fine.
Martavis Bryant, 96th overall, last pick of round 8. Thoughts?
The wild card. He's ready to go for 16 games. That's the number 2 receiver.
That's pretty good.
I have him ranked exactly 96th in my top 200.
Really? The next?
I'm completely fine taking the shot at him there.
The next two wide receivers off the board are Cameron Meredith and Corey Coleman after Bryant.
Two more guys worth a shot. But Bryant certainly has a little more upside.
Did you think Derrick Henry was great value? I certainly did. Middle of round 7, 76th overall.
I remember complaining about him being a 5th-round pick in our previous mock. That was like a month ago. So for him to slide into round 7, I think that's good for him.
Is there anything else you guys would like to say about this draft?
No, but anybody looking at it again should realize that. So I know Chris Towers took Jerry McKinnon in round 6. We did that the day of Latavius Murray signing with.
We did not know Latavius was going to. Remember, Latavius signed like at midnight.
Right. We did the draft at 2 p.m. Eastern, and he signed at 1:45 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, keep that in mind. Well, then let's finish the
show. I
don't
know if Murray would value would have changed, but McKinnon certainly would have gone in round 6.
Let's finish it with some emails.
Maybe that's where Chris would have taken his quarterback.
Some what?
Some emails.
Emails, huh?
Oh.
Jimmy, did you check your email?
No, I haven't checked my email since the start of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, so something really strange happened this past weekend, Adam. I was trying to enjoy the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. When there was a break in the action, I'd go and check my email, and I would notice in my inbox there were dozens and dozens and dozens of responses to people playing in one of my bracket leagues. And it just so happened to be the bracket league that you created for everybody that listens to the fantasy football and fantasy baseball podcasts.
Uh-huh.
And I would say it spiraled out of control pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly, yeah.
Is pretty much the worst email chain I've ever been forced to be a part of. And it's all for your goofy contest to who can pick the Elite 8 right. Never mind picking the right bracket. You have to go all the way to the Elite 8, apparently. And that's good enough for Adam. Anyway, I'm a little perturbed by it. So I went on Twitter at the start of the podcast today and I asked people what they'd like to say to you for
creating this
bracket league and then deciding to go ahead and let people email everybody.
Let people? You think I can have the option? I don't have the choice here.
There's settings you can set on CBS Sports so that you don't have to have emails go out to every single participant in the bracket. And listen, I'm happy for you that you found 1,400 people to play in a tournament with us, and whoever ends up winning, total soothsayer, good job, because this NCAA tournament's been baffling. People are still saying, take me off the list. Michael Lloyd, not to be confused with Michael Floyd, says, there should be enough podcast leagues to accommodate everyone on the email chain, and all commissioned by Adam Azer. Brett Greaser, tell him he owes me his NES Classic. One person was kind, Greg Ward, it's not your fault, it's not your fault, it's not your fault, it's not your fault, so you should probably follow Greg Ward.
Thank you, Greg. It isn't my fault. He's 100% right about that.
It's 100% your fault.
It's 100%.
How is it my fault?
Big Mike says, since I was the only person not to respond to the chain, that should get me in the podcast league automatically.
See, I didn't know you could turn off messaging.
Yeah, even Damian Dabrowski. How does CBS Fantasy not have an option to opt out of email alerts? It does. The commissioner of the bracket league didn't set it.
Well, look, the guy who wrote the original email actually apologized. He wrote an email to us and apologized. So, you are forgiven.
There was one guy, we don't have to mention his name, who just turned it into a complete poop show.
What the hell is
political,
the matter
with that? He made a political statement.
Crazy.
No, before that, though.
Which one? To me, it went south when we started talking.
Well, no, he just started complaining.
We
about
being
something.
The people in the chain.
It got ugly fast. Now, luckily, it started going to my spam. Once enough people mark it as spam, it started going to my spam. But I woke up on Saturday to 55 unread emails in that chain, and I was like, oh, bleep. I was not happy about that. But, you know, I put a stop to it. Everybody, after
no,
I...
You didn't.
I wrote the email. I said, no more emails.
You didn't put a stop to it. There was like another 100 emails after
that. No, there was not.
Yes, there was.
Then people just hadn't seen the message. It has stopped. We're fine. It's over. Let's read some good emails.
All right, good. I gotta go.
Jake from,
all right. Thanks, Villanova.
Jake from Fresno. There was a trade that went down in our Dynasty League. There were some guys who felt the trade was very lopsided. PPR League, Dynasty, 3 wide receivers. Here's the trade. Andy Dalton, Will Fuller, Max Williams, and the first pick of the second round. Dalton, Will Fuller, Max Williams, first pick of the second round. Giving all that up to get Matt Ryan and the 5th pick of the first round.
Yeah, unfair.
Terrible.
I don't know if it would be fair just for Matt Ryan, but you're getting a first round pick on top of it? I don't know what the person getting Dalton, Fuller, Max Williams is thinking, but I'd like to invite
Unless
him
really
to join my
Will.
Email chain.
You really love Will Fuller.
Maybe it's Will Fuller.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the only way this makes sense is if Fuller has the potential to become a really good fantasy player, and I can't rule that out, right?
No, but, like, if you were to say, if somebody really believed in Will Fuller, and it was just Will Fuller for the 5th pick in the rookie draft, maybe you could argue that, or Fuller in the second round pick for the 5th
right.
pick. That to me, I think, is fair. But you're throwing in...
Dalton and Max Williams, and you're throwing in
no,
Matt
no, no,
Ryan.
No, I'm saying
on
you're throwing Matt
side.
Ryan on the other side. That's the problem with it.
Yeah, it's lopsided. Shut that stuff down. No exceptions.
All right, next email from Aaron in a small, sunny, but cold Maine town.
Bangor.
Amelia, Peter, Kit, and Lena. I don't know that.
Pilots?
Who?
Pilots?
I don't know. Let's
yes,
see.
Yes, everybody knows Peter the pilot.
Peter Pan?
Peter Pan.
Peter
he flies.
He's not a pilot.
He flies.
He's a ferry.
He flies himself.
He flies around.
I'm starting a 10-team Dynasty League this year.
Well, what do you... Peter Pan can fly around, though, right?
Yes. He's
that
a pilot.
That doesn't necessarily make you a ferry, per se.
Makes him a pilot.
Listen.
He doesn't have a plane.
He doesn't need one.
You need a plane to be a pilot.
Who did I just take? Oh, now I'm on the clock, guys.
All right, hold on. I'm signing off.
Wait, no. Just can you please read the email, Dave?
He wants you to read the email.
So I need to make a pick. I have a minute left.
Talking about stupid baseball?
No, just read the damn email.
Peter Pan is not a pilot. I'm starting a 10-team Dynasty League this year. For the inaugural draft, I've decided to run an auction style for 15 rounds and finish with a snake for the remaining 10 rounds, which is cool. This should give the league members the best shot at the players they want, but also speed up the draft once we're in round 16 through 25. How do we bridge the transition from auction to snake? Some members will be out of auction money earlier than others. Other members might have more players on their team. What makes the most sense here? If it's on me, I say don't limit it to 15 rounds of auction. I think everybody in your league should get, say, a $100 budget for the auction. And once that budget is exhausted, you go to a draft, and if you spend your $100 budget on 4 players and you've got a 25-man roster, then you've got 21 draft picks coming. That's how I would do it.
Ooh,
and
that's...
21 draft picks are all going to be crappy because everybody else is going to spend their auction dollars wisely, theoretically, and they'll have 10, 12 players on their team, and they won't have nearly as many draft picks to spend, and they'll have a lot of the better players on their team via the auction.
I just did a fantasy baseball auction that turned into a snake draft, and that's completely different than what we just did. So we did, you don't have to spend all your money, but you have to fill out your starting lineup, basically. You can choose how many roster spots that you want to be filled with the auction, but for us it was our starting lineup, and then that was all auction. And then we did a 7-round reserve draft. So that's another way to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
I wasn't paying attention. I was posting a poll. Is Peter Pan a pilot because he could fly?
You let us know how that goes. Last email's from Aaron.
Well, you're on it.
Where's Aaron from? Oh, it's another Aaron.
Point Break, California.
Never
Point Break. I'm in a keeper league. You can keep two players. So he has Beckham, McCoy, and Melvin Gordon. Pick two of those three. Beckham, McCoy, Melvin Gordon.
I'm keeping Odell and Gordon.
Who do you like better this year, McCoy or Gordon?
Gordon. McCoy.
So, Jamie, you like McCoy better this year than Gordon. Who would you keep in a keeper league?
How long can I keep him for?
Is Superman a pilot?
Yes.
Superman's a pilot? Because he can fly? You know you're wrong on this.
I don't know where you can keep him from. How long you can keep him from. For. What am I saying?
I don't know. Email it. A pilot is a person who operates the flying controls of an aircraft.
He's his own aircraft.
Oh, Jamie. Amelia, Hi. Lena, Peter, and Kit, I believe, are Game of Thrones actors.
Kit, are you sure they're not pilots?
Kit is
One of them,
flying pilot.
One of them flies a dragon, so I guess Amelia is a pilot after
That's
all.
Right, she is.
How about that?
Fine. Maybe we can get away with saying that. But I think if you can fly yourself, you're not a pilot. You just have the ability to fly.
So at Disney World, the Peter Pan ride is Peter Pan having boats fly through the air.
They're connected to a machine that puts you in the air.
In theory.
You're not even levitating.
In theory, it's because Peter Pan is elevating those ships.
In theory. But in reality, it's a mechanical arm that puts your aircraft into the air, but not on its own. It needs help from something on the ground. It's not a pilot. You're not a pilot. Peter Pan is not a pilot.
I think I'm ready to go now. For Dave and Jamie, I'm
what
Adam.
Wait a minute. Adam, what do you think about this conversation? Don't share it now. Just email us.
Shut up.
All of it.
Adam.
What?
Seriously, do you consider Peter Pan to be a pilot or not?
No, he's not a pilot.
Are you sure?
All right, this is weird.
You better tell Jamie.
Bye.
Jamie's already left the room.